What if there was a scientific discovery that helps tie together ancient mythical theology and modern paranormal? What if this discovery is not even new, but instead just overlooked? Well, let's start at the beginning with an intro. You know how we do. A man who had once been shown the vastness of heaven and earth was told by a strange being that, despite his astral travels, he ain't seen nothing yet. The being said, "All mysteries have not yet been revealed to you." He wiped sweat from his forehead and felt a quiver of nerves course through him. He knew it was time to go to the place that this angel simply called the place where no flesh walks. Realizing the irony, he began to walk, accompanied by beings of translucent flame that burned but were never consumed and would take on the form of men when necessary to communicate. They took him up to 7 mountains, past infinite winter and darkness, and up through the countless luminaries. Here he witnessed the invisible vaults in which these suns were kept. He saw that in this place, fire flows like water from the mouth of the deep. Although he had been through portals before, this one was different. It seemed to reach to heaven like a throne of sapphire. In the center was an orb of virgin flame, burning, but again not consumed. A feeling of awe and dread caused him to hesitate when the beings of invisible flame called out to him, saying, "Enoch, this place is the end of heaven and earth, a prison for the stars and the host of heaven." He went and he trembled. He could not believe his eyes. He could not describe this vision except by way of saying that this place was beyond and without firmament. He saw a mighty sword composed of lightning sting the very cornerstone of the earth, and then realized what was happening and why he was being shown this terrific sight. This was generation. This was realization. This was the place where both stars and earth are born from, a place of pre-creation. This was where reality is made. We grew up under the assumption that the universe is made up of atoms, the only argument being things of concept like ideas and dreams. Well, it turns out that, like many other solid facts in science that tend to break down over time, the universe is only about 1% atomic. 99% of our physical universe is made up of plasma. Plasma is not composed of atoms. It is, loosely speaking, loose particles like charged protons and stray electrons. And it is pretty much everything, making our tangible earthly world quite literally the minority of reality overall. Our biological senses, limited to what we have come to call the black cube, is set up to work with tangible atomic reality for survival here. Making no surprise as to the origin of this mix-up, we really have to get outside the box to imagine reality in this different way. Finding this out, one is quick to assume that the plasma that makes up our unseen reality ain't doing much but hovering around lifeless. Again, this is our black cube doing the assuming for us. Professor Robert Temple, along with many scientists currently catching up to the new findings, insists that ordering properties of charged subatomic particles is quite complex. So complex that it dwarfs the neural networks of a brain. It evolves and it makes decisions. Seems unprecedented, but studies have been showing this for a long time now, and just like any other result that would cause Rupert Sheldrake to do a graceful backflip, when we find consciousness outside of ourselves, we often become frightened. Throwing out the scientific method, we say the process was flawed and shelf the findings. A shelf just high enough off the ground that Robert Temple and others with a sharp eye for anomalies can reach up and rehash the shortcomings of the scientists who shake in their boots whenever they find out something that the current textbook just won't fit. Temple has an excellent way of breaking these things down for people like myself to be able to grasp. I'll touch on many of these experiments as we go, but for the time allotted, I'd like to mostly focus on what this all means. But basically, dusty self-organizing plasmas have been found in many labs to form dissipative structures, like the opposite of entropy. Complex dusty plasmas will find each other, hold memory, reproduce, dance, look around, and even play pranks on some of the more unfortunate scientists who had to hide their very results. That last one I'll try to get to today, but all of which together seem to put the last nail in the coffin of Nail's model of a mechanical universe, as well as open the floodgates to scientifically theological philosophy, if you can imagine those not being an oxymoron, just right for this channel. Now, all this stems from micro levels of plasma that can fit in a tiny laboratory on Earth. So why is Temple's book called A New Science of Heaven? Well, if you have ever celebrated your own isolated hermit-like melancholy by staring up at the moon and feeling alone, well, you don't get to feel that sweet loneliness anymore, pup. Because there has been something looking back this entire time. We now have proof of what has become known as Kordolewski plasma clouds, and this is literally and figuratively a huge deal. Between the Earth and the Moon, absolutely fixed at dual 60-degree angles to the Moon from our planet's point of view, are two gigantic clouds looking right back at us. Discovered in 1961 by astronomer Kordolewski, hence the name, these twin clouds did not make ripples in our scientific community. But 58 years later, the discovery was confirmed and began to pique interest. Interesting indeed, because these self-organizing plasmoids are exactly the same so-called substance as the ones that our friendly yet reluctant scientists found to be self-aware in laboratories. But this is where interesting turns very abruptly into holy moly, what in God's name have we stumbled upon? Because at 9 times the size of Earth each, these two clouds dwarf everything on Earth due to sheer size and computational power. The size alone makes it safe to say that we actually live within a plasma system that happens to have an Earth and a Moon. But we are forced to remember that the complexity of these seemingly sentient plasmas have incredible memory patterns due to their particles being parallel to the neurons of a brain. In this case, a gigantic brain. Or if the self-awareness bothers you, a gigantic computer, but to say the least. I am not being coy or metaphorical when I say that the immensity of these plasmoids' computational power is enough to keep track of every single thing that has ever happened on Earth, down to the microscopic biological processes. To put this into perspective, our finest AI systems can study algorithmic patterns and loosely predict the future, and can create images based off of script, and even give poignant advice. Neat. But these plasmatic clouds are trillions upon trillions of times more powerful than any of that, and unlike our AI, show signs of true sentience. Whoa. Robert Temple has this to say about it. If the Kordolewski plasma clouds are examples of inorganic life that has existed for billions of years, they may have had a role in forming this planet throughout its long cosmic history. They may even have helped create organic life. Clearly, these ideas open up vast new speculation on the origins of the cosmos and the role of intelligence within it. I will be arguing that life in its basic state is inorganic and is not made up of atomic matter. I suggest that it is made out of pre-atomic matter, namely plasma. Thus, I am suggesting that we and all living things in the universe, whether organic or inorganic, arise from this plasma, and that the organic state is secondary to our fundamental nature as plasma beings. I will also show that as well as being very new, these ideas are also, in another sense, very old. Ancient religions and philosophers in the classical world, including Aristotle, formulated very similar ideas. I know what you're thinking. Aristotle was wrong about a lot, sure. But his science was entwined with philosophy. The grand scale of his work was that there is more to the universe than we can see. And with that, he nailed it, despite being flawed in the details. On that note, if we only study things that are already confirmed, we are just running in circles. And if we likewise only study what is tangibly real, then by definition, we will be missing out on seeing anything else. Sentience is a mystery that can't be seen, and it runs the world, perhaps even the universe. And that little perhaps thrown in there can probably be thrown out. London scientist William Crookes was bold enough to study plasmatic sentience because at the time, well, he didn't know any better. That's sarcasm. You wearing tall shoes?
What?
Why are you wearing tall shoes?
I'm not.
Those are tall shoes.
My foot is going.
I see. It just looks like it.
The soles are made out of recycled other shoes.
Is that so? Environmentally friendly tennis shoes. Between that and working with flowers, you are uber organic today. He coined the term fourth state of matter, kinda making him our plasma daddy. And this is old school and certainly no amateur science. He discovered helium and thallium in the 1800s and has since been a name staple to science. But it was the discovery of what he called radiant matter that we now call plasma that caused Crookes to later in life become infatuated with the existence of a spirit world. Unlike many other things in nature, he found that cathode rays of electrons could travel in straight lines. This was huge. And don't tell Terrence Howard, he is really out here shaking things up. But like Nikola Tesla and many other misunderstood names stapled to science, Crookes' work evolved to involve spiritual matters, and he was not shy about it. I would say that this causes them to be ahead of their time, but it seems to me that we have de-evolved into strict material science and are just now realizing what was once forgotten, now that those who fund the research are starting to realize that they cannot weaponize it. Okay, let's keep it reeled in. In 1986, it was Hiroyuki Ikezi, who predicted that plasma could take on crystalline formations. As we know, crystals are what we use in modern tech to store information, and is necessary in long-distance communication. Like our Kordolewski clouds, this is memory. And in a paper by another name that I cannot pronounce, Saitovich, we learn about plasmas using crystalline formations to form helical structures like DNA. Complex plasmas may naturally self-organize themselves into stable, interacting helical structures that exhibit features normally attributed to organic living matter. Each helical string, composed of solid microparticles, is topologically and dynamically controlled by plasma fluxes leading to the particle charging. These interacting complex structures exhibit thermodynamic and evolutionary features thought to be peculiar only to living matter. I don't want to hear any comments about my pronunciation of peculiar. Capable of reproducing and maintaining itself. Principles used to define life. The well-known problem in explaining the origin of life is that the complexity of living creatures is so high that the time necessary to form the simplest organic living structures is, or seems, too large compared to the age of the Earth. Can faster evolution rates be achieved for non-organic structures, in particular in space consisting of mostly plasmas, i.e., of natural components spread almost everywhere in the universe? This should be taken into account for formulation of a new SETI-like program, not only on astrophysical observations, but also on planned new laboratory experiments. One should be faced with the possibility of resolving the low rate of evolution of organic life by investigating the possibility that inorganic life invents the organic life. Robert Temple chimes in at this point. After all, who needs little green men when you've got gigantic intelligent clouds on your doorstep, which are billions of times more intelligent than any green man ever could be, billions of years older than any possible organic life form, and the entities who must in effect be the true masters of the universe. It goes on to hypothesize what it is that this kind of living entity would eat and consume. It wouldn't be matter. Things that are made up of matter require the consuming of matter. But everything living consumes something, and this, as startling as it is to speculate, makes me wonder about the Gnostic theories and the lost and or removed books of the Bible. And frankly, in the newish term we have, Loosh, comes to mind. Gnostic stuff is coming up, just hold on a minute. And damn it, if we open up that can of beans, then I feel like I need to revisit many of my notes on prior videos about non-flesh beings that have been influencing our world for thousands of years and today. Many people have often felt a sense of being observed throughout philosophical history. Between theories of us living in a zoo planet or our entire reality being parallel to a petri dish that is studied by higher life forms, to biological limitations seemingly put on us and transcending those limitations through Zen and other spiritual practices. What if we were all onto something? And material science has been running from the implications ever since. Not consciously running, of course, but you have noticed that when shit gets weird, material science shuts it down like, yo, we don't want to know. There are those who feel like we live within a closed system and will die on that hill despite the enormity of physical evidence. What if they are, in a spiritual or dimensional sense, correct? Is it possible that our gut intuition is that much wiser than our scientific instruments? Well, out of the two, only one of those has technological limitations. We are a fascinating species, namely because of our free will and creative nature. We don't see activity like this anywhere else in nature. How interesting we must be to a possible sidereal anthropologist, so to speak. Think about this. We have power-hungry psychopaths that want to control the world. And if we are honest, it is that same spark of insanity that can be used for creativity in the arts. This has been called divine madness. This instability in the human psyche that makes us such a dangerous and violent and destructive species can be compared to the same driving force that makes us unique, intelligent, musical, creative, and most importantly, have free will, a blessing and a curse. What an ironic trade-off. Our behavior would be a high priority of study for any life form outside of our visible reality to see what happens and possibly even learn from us itself. What if they or it wants to find out if we can make this work without intervention, to see if we can create a model of world where we can have powerful creative free will without the destructive byproduct of greed and hate. This would absolutely send a ripple of change and opportunity throughout the cosmos, seen and unseen. The concept of the fate of the cosmos being up to us has been a mainstay in the majority of religious writings and Gnostic or Zen thinking. But along with that, we might be subject to it. That's the catch. Because another mainstay in all religious philosophy is the concept of all humanity being wiped out by some flood or other natural disaster because of what was going on here on Earth. Whether it be from our sinful behavior or an outbreak of giants from Nephilim tainting the process of Earth's evolution, it always seems a similar story. The gods or God sends a catastrophe to reset the entire deal. And here is where things become very sobering to contemplate. In our last video, Plasma Apocalypse, we looked at ample evidence that the Younger Dryas catastrophe event that reset the memory of humanity may not have been from a comet or a meteor after all, but instead, as the title suggests, induced by cosmic plasma. Could it be that some of the ancient lore that we have been poring over might finally have a scientifically identifiable personage? I mean, what is going on here? I don't know, but let's reel it in again and get back to some of our research for a bit. All right, so the same book here, A New Science of Heaven, Temple writes this bold statement in regard to the findings that plasma is self-organizing, seemingly needless of an origin like our known biological life. By this means, plasma people can exist who are imperceptible to the optical nerves of the physical people who are not made of plasma but of flesh and blood. Because we are incapable of directly perceiving the plasma people, we do not know that they are there. And furthermore, they may be of such diffuse matter that they can pass through our dense physical matter and emerge intact. Scientists know that ball lightning does this. Spiritual beings, such as angels, are also said to have this capability. The internal structures of the two clouds, or Kordaluski clouds, could be so complex and at such a vast scale, they surpass any possible human knowledge at this time. The storage capacity for information would easily include the ability to retain full knowledge. Everyone who has ever lived will be recorded. The presiding consciousness, or what psychologists call the executive ego states, of the clouds will have personalities so alien from our own that we cannot conceive of them. Now, all of a sudden, we are using the word people and talking about your personal behavior, even the hidden sets being recorded. And this has religious doctrine written all over it. If you want the pun, then it's intended. And why not? I mean, nature begins with plasma. It was here first, and we have no idea where it came from or why it emerges independently. It was just here first. Then the cooling of the plasma became gas. Cooling of the gas became liquid. Cooling of the liquid becomes matter. All of which, of course, relative to their own composition and makeup. So really, plasma is not a fourth state of matter. It is the mother of all three typical states of matter. And to my Buddha friends out there, from the one comes the three, and from the three comes all things. We getting deep here. There are peeps still thinking that ball lightning doesn't exist, and simultaneously, those who claim that UFOs can be explained away by ball lightning, the latter of which now raises so many more questions about Travis Walton, and I'll try to get to that. Quit it. But ball lightning is real, and not just my name on OnlyFans. It can be artificially created in a lab, as George Richmond found out in 1753 when it literally killed him. And now I suspect foul play. Ball lightning does not seem to care about our precious solid matter. It passes right through solid walls, brick walls, the metal of an airplane, anything solid except for seemingly crystalline structures. Ball lightning does not care about wind direction or gravity either. It has been found to pretty much go where it pleases. In both eyewitness cases from nature and in lab experiments, ball lightning will mosey around curiously and take right angle turns, accelerate as if there is no wind at all. It'll stroll down the aisle of a 747 jetliner to the horror of all passengers on board and etc. It certainly seems to have a life of its own, as if it were a fractal broken off of the mother plasmoid sent to snoop around here on Earth. This has interesting mythological parallels. People often quote Moses as having spoke to God through a burning bush. Might be a bit of a Mandela effect here, but in older Bibles, it says that an angel of the Lord spoke to Moses through what was like a burning bush. Temple points out that this was not a literal bush, but a plasmoid that the authors back then just didn't have a word for. When Moses approached the burning bush, the actual Lord calls out that he stop and not get too close to the glowing orb. Now, I have always felt like this story was a parable for the DMT that comes from the acacia bush, which is so frequently mentioned in scriptures and myth, considering that it burned but didn't consume itself. I feel like that is meant to represent the alchemical transmutation, extracting the powerful hallucinogen within it. But if Temple is correct, and this was a sort of ball lightning, this does in fact bring up Travis Walton. As we know, Travis was not sought after to be abducted. He was curious, in the wrong place at the wrong time. He and his co-workers all saw the glowing orb, and Travis had the balls to approach it. But this time, the Lord didn't call out, as, well, I suppose that he wasn't expected that day, and there was an unfortunate discharge that zapped him, almost killing him. The abduction, he realized later, was the beings responsible for this mishap attempting to save his life. It should go without saying at this point that this whole plasma subject is certainly tying a lot of mysteries together, while at the same time raising so many more questions. For example, in our last video, we talked about vitrification, being that very powerful lightning can turn sand or stone into a kind of glass. This is interesting beyond the vitrified forts that we spoke of in that video. Many of us remember the surprising archaeological findings in the Red Sea that seem to indicate a literal happening there involving our friend Moses once again. But down the center of the bottom, we have found vitrified earth materials. That's two counts of possible plasma interactions with Moses, all of which unfortunately must remain in the realm of speculation, as many Bibles seem to differ greatly. Temple brings us back to the UFO subject, though. Considering that all of the above observations of ball lightning can easily be applied to UFOs, roughly speaking, that our Kordaluski clouds, being sentient, might be sending drones to observe us like they're a mothership. And considering a concept that would absolutely tickle our friend Jacques Vallée, these self-organizing particles would have no issue taking on the form of mechanical devices. This shape-shifting form of cloaking would certainly catapult us into a frenzy of conspiracy about people from space, making us completely miss the point of the UFO phenomenon. And in that case, a concept that would equally tickle Grandpa Carl, as we have covered. And I personally am tickled knowing that there is at least a few of you out there watching who completely skipped my whole UFO and alien abduction series, who are now like, oh, shit, I got to go back and give those a watch. Because, well, like I said in those videos, if you study Gnosticism and you dismiss this, you've missed the point. But nevertheless, ball lightning is plasma. But when we consider ball lightning, like the name naively suggests, we consider it to be like lightning, random and sporadic. But like Temple says, we shouldn't take what is familiar to us in daily life as the basis for trying to understand the universe, as that gives us a wholly distorted picture of reality. It should be noted that this plasma may be sentient, but it should not be confused with being consciousness itself. It seems to have the gift of consciousness, but its world is simply too alien to be perceived from our cube. The narrow spectrum of light that our eyes pick up on can't detect an invisible world, or one that we might call the other side. We always hear about the breakthroughs announced by CERN, about entities and so-called ghosts that have been detected when breaking down the fabric of reality in the particle accelerator. Workers at CERN have claimed to communicate, albeit in a very strange way, with some kind of extra-dimensional life form. It takes big, expensive equipment to do this. That is, if we ourselves are disconnected, that is. The Tibetan Book of the Dead frequently mentions the clear light. So do various other Eastern manuscripts like the Upanishads and the Gitas. There are several references to strange orbs of light throughout the Gnostic Gospels as well. And speaking of the Gnostics, a particular sect of Gnostics called the Marcosians spoke of two gigantic superhuman beings that lived in the sky on either side of the moon. And if you're thinking of the Kordaluski clouds, yes, we are on the same page, because this seems beyond coincidence. What is even more startling is what they called one of these beings. It was referred to by the name Metatron, the same being that is believed to be the angel of the Lord that spoke to Moses through the likeness of a burning bush. Let's go back to that for a moment, because perhaps Moses picked up a couple tricks from Enoch, considering that he's involved now. I found this little nugget in the much overlooked backyard section of the Book of Enoch. I saw there something like an invisible cloud, for by reason of its depth, I could not overlook it. And I saw a flame, a fire blazing brightly, and things like shining mountains circling and sweeping to and from. Despite the language barriers and differing cultures, could it be possible that all these traditions are telling us about the same thing? After all, before we even had these ancient writings, before writing at all, we have the squatting man archetype carved into stone all over the world by differing cultures without contact. And these very petroglyphs seem to be pointing directly to cosmic plasma. In all cases, it seems to be communicating with the people directly involved. And as Temple puts it, it seems that ancient seers were able to perceive clearly what we are only now able to demonstrate scientifically and recreate in advanced modern laboratories. This fits quite well with the growing theory that very ancient people were once very much more advanced than us, but the reason we don't have ample evidence of this is because their technology was more harmonious with the earth and nature, and now it seems with this plasma. This technology would have been of the spirit and not based in carbon like we have today. Therefore, disheartening as it is, our material tech has detached us from this ancient and sacred communion. Perhaps ancient peoples and shamans understood plasma sentience better than we do today, and we use their lack of unnecessary scientific jargon as an excuse to think that we have a superior understanding. Perhaps it is us that is beyond the pale when it comes to understanding this seemingly cornerstone of reality. Because if we ignore plasma, we are ignoring the sensor source that gives birth to all physical matter. If we want to better understand our world, we should be studying what gives birth to it. We should be studying its mother.